This week's parsha is one has a tremendous amount of wealth of ideas to speak about, but the part which I'm going to be focusing on first is about the topic of the Meraglim. Now, the Meraglim, as we know, unfortunately, a lot of the stories that we learn, biblical stories that we learn when we're children, our concepts of what the lessons should be don't grow as we get older. So what I try to do, and we try to do together over the years, is to look at it from a more mature, Nathan, nice to see that. What Rashi starts off when he talks about the Meraglim, Rashi says, well, the Meraglim is mentioned right after the story of Miriam. Ba'alaischa ends off that what happens is Miriam speaks Lashon Hara on Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rashi tells us that the punishment of Miriam came because the punishment of Miriam was because of Lashon Hara. And the Meraglim, they didn't learn that a person doesn't have to speak Lashon Hara. They should have learned this from Miriam. So Mefarshim asks a simple question. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara on Moshe Rabbeinu. She said, where did Moshe Rabbeinu get this right to separate from his wife and so forth? They spoke about people. The Meraglim, the spies, they didn't speak about people. They spoke about that Eretz Yisrael, it's not a land that you can conquer and so forth. So how can you learn from the Meraglim that you can't speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael? It's a famous question. Interestingly, the Chafetz Chaim in Hilchos Lashon Hara, he quotes the Yireim Shita. The Yireim Shita is, let's say you go and you walk out of a store and you say that the store sells false, faulty merchandise. The Chafetz Chaim says, Yayif Lashon Hara. So Chafetz Chaim says, how do you know that if you say that the store sells false, faulty merchandise, Yayif Lashon Hara? This is the Meraglim, Yayif Lashon Hara, if we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. So the question one has to ask is, why the Meraglim were punished because they should have learned from Miriam? What could they have learned from Miriam? Miriam spoke about a person. Meraglim spoke about Eretz Yisrael. So some want to say that we know that what's the idea when you critique Eretz Yisrael? When you critique Eretz Yisrael, what you do is you're critiquing the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's his land. It's the land that he gave for us as a gift. The point isn't that you're speaking about a object without life. You're speaking about the giver. Just like the Chafetz Chaim says that if you walk into a supermarket and what you do is you criticize the objects being sold, the crime isn't that you say, well, he says the suits there are faulty. Suits have no feelings. The things they sell in that store are of weak material. Who cares? Objects have no feelings. It's considered criticism on the owner. That's how someone learned the pshat. How the Meraglim should have learned from Miriam. Another suggestion, which I really think, is this idea. We're talking about that on Binyamin. If you've been able to hear, I just see you. That the Meraglim, it says that the Meraglim should have learned from Miriam not to speak Lashon Hara. And the question we raised is, the Meraglim spoke about a land, about which you're not critiquing a person. Miriam, on the other hand, criticized Moshe Rabbeinu, a person. How can you derive something from what Miriam did to the Meraglim? So one suggestion is, that the point is, that when you criticize Eretz Yisrael, you're criticizing the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're criticizing the one that owns it. Same like when you walk into a supermarket. But there's another approach which I'd like to share with you. And it happens to be this approach for those in 11th grade this year, heard this year in Parshas Tazria, and those that were with me when we learned, spoke a little bit of Lashon Hara in a previous year, we spoke about this idea once before. What's the Shirish? What's the root of the hate of Lashon Hara? We spoke about the real thing where it comes from is that a person is lacking in an ayin tov. What does that mean? A person doesn't see something with a positive, from a positive perspective, from a positive prism, right? If you look, what's the pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech talks about, where David HaMelech talks about the Isra of Lashon Hara? Okay, so what's the pasuk where David HaMelech talks about Lashon Hara? Mi isha chafetz chayim, oyev yamim lirois toiv. He's a person who looks at the positive of things, doesn't focus on the negative. The point of the Meraglim, even though the Meraglim didn't speak on people, they should have learned from Miriam how a person has to be able to what? A person has to be able to look at the better side of things. Now, I want to go into another idea about the Meraglim, idea number two, and explain what was the chait of Meraglim. There's a lot more to talk about. But I want to say one first of all, as follows. Because I want to just make a little bit of a disclaimer. You know, in Shulchan Aruch, there's a major, major machlekes ha-paiskim. If you could count an OTD person for minyan, it's a machlekes between the Mishneh Berurah and Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe holds that if somebody is OTD, okay, you can count them for minyan. The Chafetz Chaim paskens you can't. Chafetz Chaim paskens you can't count someone which vehemently went off the derech for minyan. So Rav Moshe says, why can't you count an OTD person for minyan? Where do we learn the concept that there's a concept of minyan? Where do we learn that you need 10 people to say Kaddish, 10 people to say Kedusha? Where is the source? Says Rav Moshe, the source is from the Meraglim. When the Torah talks about the Meraglim, the Torah calls them a group of people. And the Torah calls a group. The Torah says, how long are we part of this bad group? How many were there in the bad group of the Meraglim? There were 10 people that were what? Remember, the Meraglim, two of them were tzaddikim, Kalev and Yeshua. 10 of them, on the other hand, were Rishon. So says Rav Moshe, he passes like this to Halacha. He says, if you're on an airplane, and you need a 10th person for minyan, and the only guy you have is someone which, and we're not talking about a Tinik Shanish, but Tinik Shanish means a child that literally means a kid, somebody that didn't have a Jewish education. You have someone which, for argument's sake, he went to yeshiva when he's younger, and he went off to derech. Rav Moshe paskens you can count them for a minyan. He says the Meraglim are called a group. The Meraglim are Rishon. The Chafetz Chaim paskens not like that. The Chafetz Chaim and the Mishneh Berurah says that if you have for a minyan somebody that went off to derech, you can't count them for a minyan. So I want to just share with you. I heard once from there's a big mashpia. Big speaker, his name is Rav Moshe Wilson. He said a Meridic idea. I want to share this with you. I heard this once from Rav Moshe Wilson. I want to share this with you, what he said. He says, you know, when the Gemara talks about the source of minyan, the Gemara learns it out. It says, Mitaycha Eida Azais. It says, we learn out of Gzeri Shava. The word that says Mitaych means from within this group. How long are you going to be from within this bad group? So Rav Moshe Wilson said a Meridic idea, and this is what I want to share with you for a minute. Mitaych, which also means within, means what you have to do is you have to look really what's within that person. The person might present himself as a Rasha, but if you look into the Mitaych, if you look into the inner part of a Jew, the inner part of a Jew is Kaddish. You could have someone which took a spiritual and he threw it out. Because I have someone which he knows about Shabbos, he threw it out. But you know, when the pasuk talks about the Meraglim, it says, Mitaych ha'eda hazais, from within this group. It says, you know why Rav Moshe justified counting somebody that went off the derech for a minyan? Because you have to look at Mitaych, you have to look at his inner part, there's that Jewish part of his soul. The Tanya calls it, Tzachelik alekai mimal. Somebody wrote to me about this yesterday, I wrote a questionnaire. There's that inner, what should I say, spiritual part, which is spiritual Adam, which you can't detach from a Jew. There's a famous Rambam, famous Rambam. So somebody wrote here a question. Jake Fuchs wrote, OTD is different than a Rosh Hashanah. What about Ramesha? What? Ramesha holds that you can even count the Kaifer, by the way. Somebody wrote it, Jake. The Mishabura says you can't. Ramesha says in the Tshuva you can. Even somebody that's an open Kaifer, says you can count it for a minute. Mishabura says it's pointless. Because what do you mean? You're telling him to say Kaddish and Baruch when he doesn't believe in it? Ramesha says, La Halacha. He says, since we learn out from the Meraglim, okay, Jake? He says you could count them for a minute. Why? Because it's mitaycha eidazais. You have to look what's in the internal part of the Jew. There's a Rambam. The Rambam says that if you force someone to give a get and you beat him up and he finally says he's going to give the get, the Rambam says that the divorce is a divorce. And the question is, by a divorce, we know halachically, in order for a divorce to be effective, it has to be that the husband really sincerely wants to do it. So if I take any of you here and I beat you up, and then you're going to say you want to do it, I mean, if I take a baseball bat to anybody here, even to Eitan, right? I think he'll, or to Benny, I think they're not going to, well, of course, yeah, I'm doing it, right? If I whip Binyamin, right, my ultimate dream, okay? And he said, he's going to say, I'm ready to do it. I don't think that really shows that you really want to do it. So the Rambam says, because the intrinsic part of a Jew is that he wants to do the correct thing. Sometimes he does something silly. So he beat him up, and then when Bezin says that somebody has to give a get for argument's sake, and the Jew honestly is ready to do so, says the Rambam, the get is effective. This is the first idea I wanted to speak on the parsha. Now I want to share with you another idea on the parsha. I want to share with you two or three little stories you could say about a Shabbos table. Okay, I want to start off with a thought from the Kotzker Rebbe. And I want to share with you two stories. One is a true. One is a mashal. One is a story. When the Meraglim come back to Moshe Rabbeinu, they say, "Vani b'einenu k'chagov." We were in their eyes like a bunch of grasshoppers. V'chein ha'inu b'einayim. I'll translate the pasuk again. The Meraglim come back and say, "We were like grasshoppers, and so were we in their eyes like grasshoppers." The Kotzker Rebbe used to bang on his table. Kotzker Rebbe was a very sharp person, as you remember from previous years. When one of my favorite Hasidic masters to say, "Oh, this is from the Kotzker Rebbe," he says, "You felt like grasshoppers, great. But what about the second part of Pasuk? Who cares what they thought? We were like that in their eyes." Says the Kotzker Rebbe, "Who cares? Part two of the Pasuk is we're their crimes. I understand. You walked into a land, you saw a bunch of giants, right? Imagine a pre-1A kid walking into 11th grade high school class. Walking into an NBA game, you know, it's a basketball game. You know what? He'll feel like a cockroach. But v'cheinu yinu beineihem is the crime. What do you care what someone looked at you like? Where's your pride?" The Kotzker Rebbe said that's the shorish of the Meraglim. They were worried what, and again, the Meraglim is a lot what to talk about. Right? There's a lot what to talk about. But the point is, where's your pride? So I want to first tell you a true story, and then I'm going to tell you a mashal from the Dubna Magid. I'm sure many of you, everybody here seems to be quoting me, especially two Talmidim seem to be sending me texts with different type of quotes from Jonathan Sacks. Prior to Jonathan Sacks, the chief rabbi of England was Lord Jacobus. Anybody heard about him? Lord Jacobus, the chief, and he actually was given a title by the Queen of England to be a knight. Lord Jacobus, he was originally, I think he was the rabbi of the Fifth Avenue Synagogue in Manhattan at one point. And he was invited to a dinner with the Queen, from Prime Minister Thatcher, okay, in the Queen's Palace. And they told him, you have to come with your wife. And part of social norms is, you know, you're going to have to eat. So he says, listen, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm an Orthodox Jew. This is no problem. He says, we'll take care of you. We'll take care of you. We're going to get you meals from there's a kashrus organization in England. It's called Kadasa. Like sort of like the OU over there. It's probably run by a little bit, you know, maybe more Haredim, but it's a totally reliable hechsher. That's the one that's accepted in England. We're going to bring it to you in the palace. He says, okay. So not only that, because they went, they checked by the local. You can talk about it. This is not America, you know. In the White House, they kashered a place twice a year. They have a Hanukkah party and a Purim party, where dignitaries are invited, Chabad members are invited, somebody from Dagoda comes, and so forth, from the Israel movement comes. But remember, this is England. This is not the United States. So Lord Jacobowitz comes to the party. He has, like, I guess everybody's eating fresh food. He's having almost like you serve on the airplanes, but it's served in nicer china and so forth. He served the meal. And then all of a sudden, in between speeches, he sees, he never was invited to one of these meals. He never made these arrangements. He sees all of a sudden, what everybody does is, they go, and they move, they switch places in between courses. And you eat the next course, they bring you fresh china, and you eat the next course across the table. That was the social norms in the 80s in England. I don't know, I guess I'm not so sure of COVID-19, what they would say about that today, but that was the norms. And what does he do? He comes to the second course. He picks up his plates, and he moves it to the next area where he's supposed to sit. Everybody else, what they did was they brought him fresh china. He literally had to move 4 or 5 times during the meal with his china to be able to participate in it. Okay, at the end of the meal, so he's introduced as a true story. He's introduced to Prince Charles, and he shakes his hand, and he sees that he says, you're the one, because you're the Jew you're the guy from the one with the china, moving around with the china all night. So Lord Jacobowitz says, yes, proudly, yes, that's me. Prince Charles, this guy sees that he's getting, very interesting. I said, I didn't know anybody keeps the kosher laws today and so forth, whatever. Right next to him, there was a rabbi. I don't want to give any names to any, put it this way. He was a rabbi that didn't keep kashrus. So which part of Judaism he belonged to, I'll leave to your imagination. So he introduces himself to Prince Charles. He says, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm also Jewish. So he looks at him. Guy's obviously not wearing a yarmulke or anything. I have one question for you. Because what do you do exactly? Because I'm a rabbi. Because where are your plates? I mean, about anybody else walking around with your plates. So he says, well, I knew I was coming to a non-Jewish place. I didn't know how it would look. And you know, they like to throw out the term Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem is Kiddush Hashem. Prince Charles had to give Musar to this non-Orthodox rabbi, where is your plates? You know what the problem about this guy was? He wasn't proud in being a Jew. He was embarrassed that the old-fashioned Jew came with plates and wouldn't eat from the kashrus over there. The nekud of the miraglim is, v'nechena yinu be'ineyim. You feel like a grasshopper, great. You feel like a grasshopper when you're in front of. Imagine if we would be all second graders, we'd be sitting in front of 6 feeters. Great. But why do you take that attitude? So I want to share with you a final thought. The Dubna Magid. Dibna Magid says the same idea as the Kotzke Rebbe and so forth, but as always, the Dibna Magid always has his always has a mashal. And the mashal, as the Gra said, that all the mishalim of the Dibna Magid always hit the target. It always hits the bullseye. It's a funny mashal, but I share it with you. So the Magid had a mashal, has a mashal, that there was also a bunch of frogs. They're hungry like crazy. They're hungry, they eat for days. Finally, a frog comes back from the other side of the lake and tells them that if you jump on top of a tree, a very large jump, there's food, there's plenty of, you know, that frogs eat worms and so forth. You'll be able to get as much food as you want. So they decide, they got there's a group of frogs that they're jumping, and you have to realize it's literally, you have to jump to a very high part of the tree. Okay. Group of them, it's like 7 or 8 trees away till you get to it. A group goes to the first tree, and they see the next tree, you just can't make it. If they'll go to the next tree, they'll just fall. They won't make it. The next group gives up by the next tree. So there's literally a few frogs left. Finally, there's three frogs left. And the people on bottom tell them, jump. You're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. You're going to get food that's on a tree so tall. You're not going to make it. They try. 2 frogs fall to the floor. They give up. There's 1 frog left. His friends tell him, "Do me a favor. Can you get off that tree? You're going to die. You're going to die." The little frog goes. He jumps to the top of the tree. He gets to the area of the bugs. And he's a very generous frog. Besides the food that he takes for himself, he takes the whatever rodents are on top of the tree and he throws down for some of his friends, and everybody's happy. This guy obviously becomes the hero, this frog. So his friend downstairs goes over to the frog and tells him, "Listen, you are the hero today. Can I ask you one question? Which tribe of frogs do you belong to?" He asks him once, he asks him a second time, a third time. So the guy gives up. He figures that this frog thinks he's like the Hatzalah member, middle of 9/11 or middle of COVID-19, that he saved all the frogs from food. See, the head of the tribe of the frogs is really upset. Until one of his friends come over and tell him, "Do you know why he ignored you?" He goes, "No. He ignored you because he's deaf. So he couldn't hear when you were asking him his name." Says the Dibna Magid, "Why did that frog survive? Everybody from the bottom is screaming, 'You won't make it, you won't make it, you won't make it, you won't make it.' What gave that person the koyach and the ability to be able to persevere? He ignored what people were saying down there." Rabbi Say, if we can learn one thing from the chait of the miracle, if we can learn from the frogs, who says you have to listen to what people are saying to you, if you can learn something from Lord Jacobowitz, right? Be proud. Be proud. What is it? If he was able to go, if he needed the rabbi, I'll give him what the unaffiliated rabbi had to hear Musa from Prince Charles about kashrus. What if you're proud of what you do? If you're proud of who you are, you won't lose out in life. You won't. You look after the Holocaust, you know, it was very, very popular. So I don't want to be judgmental, but to ask around, particularly after the Holocaust, when people entered certain fields, there were people that were scared to wear a yarmulke in public in certain fields. Today, it's very common. You can walk into a loft, you can walk into court, you see a prominent lawyer, and he's not embarrassed. He could walk with a yarmulke, who sits outside, and if he has time in between, he can even come with his gemara to learn a little bit in between. It doesn't hurt. If you take the part that when you're proud about something, it doesn't matter. What does the parsha end off with? The parsha ends off with Parsha Tzitzis. What's the Parsha Tzitzis? So I want to share with you another thought from the Dun Magid, something to remember. Parsha of Tzitzis ends, L'man tiskru asisam is called mitzvayisai v'yisen kedeshim olakeichem. Through Tzitzis, a person will remember and be sanctified to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why does Tzitzis remind the person that he's Jewish? So we all know Tzitzis is become after 611. We know that there's, especially those people that were with us this year and learned Menachas Tzitzis. And then we know that the blue is Daimed Kisa covered and so forth and so forth. Somebody asked the Dibna Magid, you know, very interesting, he wears tzitzis, but there's no zecher, it doesn't remind him of anything. So the Dibna Magid said, I want to share with you this mashal. So there was once a person, the poor person, and he had no money, he had to go collecting. So he goes collecting, and he comes to a very rich person's house, and the guy has a bell. Touches the bell once, says the butler brings him his slippers, touches it twice, the butler brings him food, touches it three times, the butler brings him the newspaper, five times, the kids have to know to do homework. So, as soon as he sees this, he doesn't even ask the guy for a donation, he tells his wife he solved all the problems. So what are you going to do? So I'm going to buy a bell. I'll touch this bell once. Butler will bring me this twice will be food, third time will be slippers, the fourth time will be the newspaper, the fifth time the kids will remember to come to do homework. Says the Dibna Magid, tzitzis is a reminder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is like a bell. If somebody's connected to Torah and Yerushalayim, tzitzis is good as a reminder. But if somebody is not connected to Torah and Yerushalayim, tzitzis doesn't serve as a reminder. Somebody has the bell and he has food, right? I guess today, you know, maybe it would be with an intercom, I guess with your cell phone. Then it'll help. Rabbi said, but if you're not connected, all these things don't help. Tzitzis doesn't help. Yarmulke doesn't help. ETC. You say what we learn with the miracle. Let's be proud who we are. Let's not be embarrassed who we are. Okay? And also, let's look at, as we started off at the beginning of this year, look at things with an eye and type. I see a lot of guys were busy. They WhatsApped me. They weren't available. But I just want to say good job to the boys that are here. Nathan, have a good